Blog Talk Radio.
Have the Boston Vegan Family, and you can find them at bostonveganfamily.blogspot.com. So it's very appropriate, even though we're all vegans, this is Vegetarian Awareness Month, so, you know, it's on the way, it's a step through. So we're just going to start out, we're not going to go with the, I don't know if Lee likes to be called the matriarch or not, but we're going to start with somebody else first. So, Jeep, you're in the family. Do you want to tell us how you came to this decision? It's a complete lifestyle. It's a change. Like, were you born in it? Did Kelly have some influence on you? How did you get to this point?
Well, that's a good question. I definitely wasn't born into it. When I met Kelly and her family back in April or May, I was a 7-Eleven eater. Like, they pretty much three meals a day at 7-Eleven. I was always in the athletic side of things, but I never really ate well, and I didn't even know what a vegan was. But then very soon after meeting Kelly and her family, I found that I quickly just kind of adopted a vegetarian diet, and without even thinking, really. And then after a couple weeks of that, I decided to give veganism a shot, and I loved it.
Okay, we'll come back to some other questions for you. Kelly, how did you get into this, and wasn't it exciting to turn Jeep on to it?
It was very easy. He was very willing to be turned on to it.
Yeah.
I came across veganism, I think it was about 2 years ago. I was temporarily trying out a macrobiotic diet, and part of that you don't eat. But I thought that I would go back to eating meat, you know, after a short period of time with that. But I started reading a book. It was really Alicia Silverstone's book, The Kind Diet, is what flipped the switch in my mind when she talked about the way the animals are treated in factory farms. And I was done.
Yeah. That'll do it for most of us.
Yeah.
You are the mother here, so how did you make this change, or when and why?
Well, I just want to clarify that Jeep is not my son. He is my daughter's light-filled, wonderful boyfriend, and we're lucky enough to have him around here for Sunday dinners and everything in between. We just love him, but it was not conditional for him to be vegan to hang around here.
Right.
I came into it because I was having terrible stomach aches and what they would call IBS and digestive problems. And when I put down animal products and stepped away from wheat gluten, that all resolved really, I'd say, within a couple of months. I did not lose weight quickly, and I did need to lose weight. I started out as a size, I'd say, tight 14, and probably now I'm about a loose size 9, so probably coming in after 2 years on a size 8. I never weighed myself because I didn't want to punish myself. I had a big goiter in my throat, and when I would try to do yoga, it would bounce up and down, and I used to wake up in the middle of the night gasping for air. I had apnea. My whole life I had been an athlete. I was into lifting weights and running, and I had always been quite trim, and I knew that something was wrong with me because no matter how little amount of food I ate, I could not and would not lose weight. My first two juice fasts, I did not lose 1 pound, and I knew that if I continued eating in the way that I was eating, that it was only going to get worse. And even though I was vegan, for a long time, did not lose an ounce, I knew that there was nowhere else to turn, and I stuck with it. And then I watched the movie Earthling. I had never made the connection with the animals, and I had been macrobiotic for many years in my 30s. And 10 minutes into the movie Earthling, I couldn't watch anymore. I was so astounded at the viciousness and the hideous treatment towards the animals and the factory farms that I was also finished.
Yeah, I think so. All of you basically started out for health reasons more than the compassion, but then the compassion came into it.
Yeah.
Have you had any trouble with other members of your family? And by trouble, I mean, do they point and say, well, we can't have you over? Or if you go over, they try to shove food on you that you don't eat?
Well, I've been lucky. This is Kelly talking.
Okay.
I haven't encountered that with my direct family because we're all vegans now. My boyfriend, I was ready to be with a meat eater, and he even switched over, too. But I've had friends give me a hard time, or like having someone come over and not so sure about the whole veganism thing. But I'm not preachy about it.
Yeah.
I just eat what I eat, and if somebody asks me about it, I'll talk about it all day long. And I've actually had friends that were kind of suspicious of it, and now experimenting with it or considering it, or even having a vegan meal now and again. So. So with my friends, I've encountered it, but I just stood strong in what I'm doing, and they can't help but notice how good I am feeling and then doing.
That's good. It's sort of like for a lot of people, we hear about Meatless Mondays, how some people who are adamant meat eaters still, either for health reasons or financial reasons or planetary reasons, they've decided to make one day a week no meat. And so you know it's just like you say, if you don't just preach, they start looking and saying, well, okay, why is her skin clear, that kind of thing, or why are you so happy about whatever. So I like the subtle approach sometimes, but I don't know. What about you?
I wanted to interject for a moment, if I can. I'm very comfortable with being considered the matriarch. I've earned my position only in my age and life's experience. These young people are totally responsible. Jeep is a triathlete in training. He's totally self-supportive, has his own place. He's 20 years old, and this guy needs a lot of energy to do all the things that he does. Kelly's in college. She supports herself financially, pulls her own weight. She's a very good student. She has a very high GPA. And when I go to people's house I just wanted to say, matriarch to me doesn't mean authority. It just means a little more life experience.
Right.
It depends on how you carry yourself, but no one has ever given me a bad time about veganism, not one time. I'm a strong woman, and I'm a very loving woman. But I don't carry myself in a way that people would question me about what I'm eating, wearing, doing in any way. It wouldn't make sense to me for somebody to be critical about what I'm eating. It would be a very strange comment for somebody to make to me. So I carry myself in a certain way about everything. So, no, there has never been an issue about what I'm eating. And if we go to a family gathering, we bring food. And
sure. And
we stick to what we bring, or if there are vegan options, we have what we bring and we partake in the vegan options. But we really don't speak about it. We just eat what we eat, and we're gracious and grateful to be invited to gatherings, and we are not there to push any sort of agenda. It's simply how we eat.
Yeah. So that sounds like a very, a more reasonable way that will probably have more people curious. I know some people who are very the opposite, as far as they won't go any place if there's going to be meat, or if they do, they make a big show about it. And that doesn't really win friends and influence people. Not that that's exactly what we're trying to do, but it doesn't get people on our side, so to speak. I wanted to ask, Jeep, have you ever run into any problems with your family, your parents, brothers, sisters, or your friends?
Yeah, I've had a slightly different kind of experience with it. I spent a couple years in the Coast Guard, so I have a lot of buddies up here who are meat-eating sailors, and so I'd meet up with them, and they'd say, they'd ask if we wanted to go grab a burger, and the first time I said, no, I'm going to grab something else, they were all kind of shocked. But Yeah, but they've all been actually extremely supportive and for the most part pretty open to it. I know my family definitely has. My family's from back in Pittsburgh. They always listen to every new food idea that I tell them. And actually, ever since my going vegan, my whole family I think has gotten healthier as part of it.
Wow.
And even my best friend from back home, I went home to visit him, and he was giving me the hardest time. And now he won't declare himself as a vegan, but he pretty much is. And his health is in a lot better because of it.
Yeah, but the health has to be better. I know some people, if they do a fast switch, sometimes they have some issues, and that's just because all these toxins are coming out of their body.
And along with that, I mean, I was always a, decently shaped guy in the Coast Guard. And I didn't see my buddies for 6 to 8 weeks. And they said I looked like a completely new person, after just 2 months of being vegan.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you know it works. And there's so many people now who are like you, an athlete, who are vegan, many. It's not all that unusual. And there are people who really, have the muscle, everything. So when you talk about, you have to have, I've heard people in gyms talk about the grams of protein someone needs to build muscle, and it's just not true. If we stay around 10% whatever protein, we're good. And they're advising their clients to have 30-35% protein in their diet.
Right.
It's just not a natural thing. It's not a good thing.
Right. And that was one thing that I was worried about as I started this. And I soon learned that same exact thing. Or I learned that people were taking the wrong type of protein because I still think that, some people do like the protein with a workout. And I very soon found a plant-based protein drink to work out, and I felt great.
Yeah, there are. As I understand it, there's quite a few. I know several people who are athletes, and like my friend Jeff, who has a show actually on the station, the Super Fit Vegan, doesn't use any, powders or anything, but he runs and he does between 300 and 900 squats, push-ups, and all of this every workout. And he's got muscles, like real muscles. And, he says he doesn't need the extra.
Right.
So, there's a lot of, and runners. A lot of runners now are vegan.
Yeah.
So, the endurance and all, it's there. It's been half. But I wanted to ask, even though he's not on, Kevin, Lee's 9-year-old, how is he doing this at school? How does that work for him? Does he take a lunch? Does he try to eat from the cafeteria? What do you do with him, Lee?
Kevin brings a sandwich every day, I put tofu salad in it, he can bring vegan organic enchiladas, or he can bring pasta. Sometimes I have a small Tupperware I put beans and mustard in for him. I pack his lunch every day, but I always have because the school lunches are really abominable.
Yeah.
And I never wanted him to eat the school lunches anyway. So that's nothing new for him to have his own lunch packed up. And actually, sometimes the kids, he just told me actually yesterday, sometimes the kids do say, wow, what do you have for lunch? And he has to educate them. I guess kids are a little more honest about their inquiry than adults are. But he's fine. And we actually make a lot of whole foods treats. We just made Rice Krispies treats. And this weekend we made a pumpkin tofu cheesecake. And he gets in the kitchen and fixes food with me and gets all excited about treats, just like kids who eat refined sugar or other foods. Little kids can get all turned on by whole foods, too.
Yeah. And also, what helps Kevin in school, though, with bringing his own lunch and stuff like that, is he understands that what the food he is eating is powering him and making him strong.
Mm-hmm.
He's the fastest kid on the soccer team, and he understands that the food that they're feeding in the cafeteria he understands that it's really not good for you.
Yeah.
So with that understanding, it makes him
it's easy, it's not a big deal for him to bring his food with him because he knows that he's going to be stronger and his mind's working better and his body's working better because that's what he's eating.
Yeah. No, that's great that at this age, I mean, you've made him understand, like you said, that this is what powers him. So he can see it. He's the fastest kid on the soccer team, and he sees what the others are eating. So why would he want to do that and slow himself down? Good point. Now, Lee, at one point you were natural, weren't you? And in fact,
yeah.
You learned to cook that way.
For many years I was macrobiotic, and I cooked for a family of seven every single day for years, macrobiotic, yes.
So what changed? Why did you leave that? Because I believe macrobiotic fish is part of that, isn't it?
Yeah, they do a little bit of salmon. I wasn't big on having fish when I was macrobiotic. I actually stopped doing macrobiotics when I had when I was 40. I had a high-risk pregnancy, and I wasn't capable of standing on my feet in the kitchen for 2 hours every day and cooking any longer. So my diet slowly took a detour back into the standard American diet, and I just got caught in a treadmill of thinking that I could eat that way and be healthy, and it just wasn't true. My health deteriorated very fast.
How long did it, you say very fast. What, were we talking just a matter of a few months?
Well, the toxicity, no. When I was pregnant with my son, I was very light. I'm 5'8". When I got pregnant, I weighed about 130 pounds, and I was not a big eater. And I gave birth, I weighed around 230 pounds.
Oh.
Because of the toxicity in the food, when I went after I had him, I urinated nonstop for about a week and lost just about 40 pounds of water. That was my body trying to protect itself from all the toxins that were inside of me. And then from then on, you know, then I had a small baby and I was going through a divorce, and I just didn't have the peace and the setup to be able to. You have to, when you're cooking macrobiotics, and when I cook in the kitchen now, I play peaceful music. My kitchen is beautiful. It's not modern, but it's surrounded. It's clean. It's,
mm-hmm.
It has good imagery, and I feel happy, and I feel love when I fix food.
Yeah.
And if I don't feel happy and I don't feel love, I won't cook for people. So my life was at an all-time high stress, and I just didn't have the opportunity to do that, to have tranquil cooking. But it started, and I was moving a lot, and it started coming back, I'd say about 3 years ago, and I flipped the switch and went completely vegan about 2 years ago.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that about the kitchen and the surroundings, because it's so true. And if people have never experienced it, you know, food just doesn't taste the same when there's somebody in the kitchen. And this holds true for restaurants a lot. If there's a fight going on in the kitchen at the restaurant, you know, you really don't want the food.
100%.
It's not good. I don't like to sit down at the table. In fact, I refuse to eat a meal with somebody that I'm having issues with. I like a nice, peaceful meal. And doesn't even always have to be real peaceful. I mean, good discussions with smart people. I like all that. I just don't like the agitation. And so if there's somebody there who's, you know, giving me dirty looks or something, I just will pass it by. I'm not that hungry. So I like what you're talking about, a nice kitchen, sort of, the charm when we think of a family kitchen. Is that what you've got? Yeah.
Well, actually, when we moved into our current home, it was a collaborative venture, and we all picked out a paint color together, and Jeep painted the kitchen a beautiful color, and then God bless him, he held pieces of art up endlessly until we felt everything was in the right place, and to give the kitchen a good streamlined feel. And I think I mentioned before that it's really important to have the kitchen set up with just a few basic things that you can grab and clean easily,
yes.
Cook with easily, because if your kitchen's a hassle, you're not going to take the time to cook fresh food.
Exactly. Right. I mean, if you have to move a whole lot of things to get either your cooking utensils or the spice you need or whatever. It's just after doing that several times, it's just, okay, I'm just not going to do it. So I want to ask, you all have specialties or favorites that you'd like to fix?
Well, now, my favorite thing to cook is whatever's easiest. I'm not a very good cook at all. I'm trying, so I like to stick to simple meals like corn with a little vegetable broth. That's my go-to. I can eat that 3 times a day.
Oh, okay. Not real balanced, but yummy, huh?
What did you say that you need to eat over here? Is there anything?
Oh,
say
but,
what?
But if I had a choice, is
if you had a choice, what?
We eat some great pasta dishes with, kale salads or other types of salads. They're delicious. I'm working on it.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, some of those things, it's really simple, and there's no right or wrong. Like with the kale salad, I mean, you can't screw it up. It's whatever. Kelly, yeah. What's your specialty?
Well, the one that my go-to I have for breakfast every morning is oatmeal with chia seeds, goji berries, and raisins.
Ah.
Is what I eat every morning. Start the day with a warm water with lemon in it.
Yes,
that's my. It's easy. I really have a lot of time, and it's really nutrient packed. So I go for that in the morning time.
Yeah. And then that holds you till lunch.
I usually have a snack sometime between breakfast and lunch. Like, trying to think, what would I have? Like, baby carrots and hummus is something easy, or a rice cake with some almond butter on it, or a rice cake with hummus, or a tofu salad. Okay. Easy, because I'm a nanny. In the morning time, I'm with my kids that I'm chasing after, so I have to have stuff that's easy and quick.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm a part time nanny while I go to school.
Oh, okay. So you are really chasing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that hummus and falafel really should be a food group, but that's me. Ever since I discovered them, it's like, okay, everything. I mean, you'd be surprised what you can do with falafel, how many things it goes in or by itself, and the hummus, sure. Lee, what would be your favorite to eat or favorite to cook?
He's a little bit fancier than us. The first thing I wanted to say is, if any of your listeners are curious about what these beautiful people look like, I wish you could see them. There's pictures of Kelly and Jeep at Boston Family Vegan blog spot. Boston Vegan Family should just straighten me out about that. Boston Vegan Family blog spot. I have some favorites. I make a lot of things. I do an organic whole foods gluten-free pizza crust, and with the organic low-fat sauce and pile veggies on.
Mm.
We just put a sprinkle of diet cheese on the top. You don't need much. Another thing I like to do is spinach rolls in the rice wrappers with a peanut soy sauce. And then another thing is, especially with the holidays coming up, I mix sweet potatoes in pasta, and I make put cranberries in there, and I make a sauce that goes on there, and it has all the flavors of Thanksgiving without any animals or anything in it. And there are recipes on my blog, and that's coming up. And another thing I make is, it's really simple. Is we did sliced squash, sliced it thin and long ways, and put in a bunch of, like a ton of spinach, because it cooks down, and layer it with spaghetti sauce and slow cook it, and that comes out really, really good. And this weekend, I'm going to make a lasagna, and I'm going to do the gluten-free lasagna noodles. I'll do a layer of tofu salad, and then I'll do a layer of the thin sliced sweet potatoes long rice, and then I'll put in more sauce, and then I'll layer it, and then I'll put a little diet cheese on top. I'm going to make us a lasagna for Sunday dinner.
Mmm, that sounds good. Now, you and Kelly both mentioned tofu salad. What is in your tofu salad? Tell us.
Well, actually, we cheat a little bit. We get the tofu salad at Whole Foods that's organic, and it's made by The Bridge. And we like to put it through the high-speed blender to smooth all the bumps out of it. And it's delicious.
Ah, so it's more of a sauce then?
Oh, no. It comes out more like a thick dip, and it's very spreadable, but it doesn't have all the chunks of vegetables in it.
Okay. All right. I get
when
that.
When you get it in the store, it kind of looks like a tuna salad.
Okay.
Yeah, and then we smooth it out to make it kind of creamy, like a hummus texture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see. Okay, now that sounds excellent. What do you put in? You were talking about sweet potatoes and cranberries and all. Now, is that something that you make like a salad, or do you bake that?
No, first I cook the pasta, and then I cook the sweet potatoes, and I cut them in chunks. And I could put some green onion in there and some cranberries. And then very simple sauce made out of some kind of sweetener. It could be brown rice syrup. It could be maple syrup. And then soy sauce. Equal parts of soy sauce, sweetener, and water. And then just stir that in and turn it over in it. That's actually the glaze that I used to put on top of my turkey. And now I just mix it in, plenty of it, in the pasta, sweet potato salad. And it's really a crowd pleaser. I have to make a trough of it when I make it because everybody keeps going back to it.
You know, that sounds excellent. And it sounds like it'd be so pretty also. So
it's
the
very
holidays through the whole winter. No, that's when sweet potatoes are a little more reasonable to buy, and cranberries.
Another thing that people are very shy about making is veggie burgers or, you know, plant-based burgers. They're very easy to do. Get out the food processor, and if you have leftover grain or any leftover veggies in the refrigerator, throw them all in the food processor and mix them up together so you have a mash, and you can put beans in there if you want to. And then I put down a piece of parchment paper on a cookie sheet and spray a little coconut oil on it and form them into patties. And it doesn't matter what you form into patties, even if it's all veggies, and it bakes. And then when you take it out of the oven, you put it in for about 30 minutes on 400, and then you take it out of the oven and let it set for 10 minutes, and you have beautiful patties that you can chop up and throw in pasta, that you can put in a sandwich, that you can eat next to some rice and a vegetable. It's really very easy, and it's a great way to clean out the fridge. And we like to throw in, you know, sky's the limit. We like them with sun-dried tomatoes, basil, salt and pepper. There's really nothing you can't put in them.
Yeah. No, that's so simple. And I know a lot of people, if they hear that you're vegetarian or vegan, they immediately start thinking about the veggie patties. And you know, I mean, I've gone through my fair share of nasty ones already bought, and you probably have too, which is like, okay, it's time to do my own. I totally understand that. But the last ones I made, I had some black eyed peas, and so that was the base for them. And it was lovely. Like you said, they'll clean out the fridge. That's what food processors are for, I think, or one of those things are for, or blenders,
exactly.
Or whatever. Yeah.
And we always cook big too. We never make a serving for one. We always cook big and share. Always.
Well,
as far as the topic of food, Kelly, something that we do that's really simple is we always keep a grain on the stove, like. Make a lot of brown rice, a lot of quinoa, a lot of millet. So, because that's something really simple that can go into pretty much any meal.
Mm-hmm.
So we like to just keep it on hand. So when we're hungry, we go in and put some on a plate with whatever else, veggies, beans, that we want to eat as well.
So, no, that's good. And you are eating pretty gluten-free, right?
100%. Well, keep is not gluten-free, but... Me and my mom and Kevin and my sister Robin are all gluten-free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, but like you said, I mean, between like oatmeal and quinoa, and there's several grains that people can use. Did you ever use teff, that tiny little seedy looking thing that the Egyptians make the, not Egyptians, Ethiopians make? It looks like a round piece of base or something. I haven't used it. I've just eaten it, and I do want to get some and see what I can do. So I was just asking if you're familiar with it.
No, I've never heard of it before. My mom's shaking her head. She doesn't either.
It's just another, you know, something to try. That isn't it amazing? Because when people find out you don't eat meat, I mean, I still get those looks like, well, what do you eat?
Yeah.
And it's like, my God, there's 3,000 kinds of vegetables or whatever in the world. And, you know, I mean, I'm working on them. I want to taste them all. I've never met one that I, you know, couldn't stand. And then all the fruits and the herbs and the seeds and the nuts, it's like, what don't we eat? We just don't eat flesh. I don't know, but if you come from, like, I live in the Midwest, where a lot of people, it's in meat, potatoes, corn, meat, potatoes, green beans, you know, that kind of thing. And so, you know, the things you're talking about, they're like, huh? Do you do mono meals very much?
Well, first, before we went to mono meals, we put grains. We make sure to have a lot of grains in all of our meals. It's important to keep the carbs up. But on to mono meals, I'll send that over to you.
Right. Yeah, I briefly heard about it from Kelly, but she had said she never tried it, so I decided to look into it on my own. And it didn't take too much research for me to just decide to give it a shot. I mean, pretty much everything behind it was, you know, eat what your body likes and eat a lot of it.
Yeah.
And you know, so I gave it a shot, and I've tried the juice fast and everything. I did a 3-day juice fast, and I liked that, but for some reason, I enjoyed mono eating a lot more. it was simple. I still felt like I was eating, and I felt very cleansed from it.
Yes, you must be sort of like me. I mean, I like the actual the action of my jaws moving on food. I don't juice. I don't have a juicer, but I'm I mean, once in a while, I'll just, like, depending on where I am, have a smoothie or share a smoothie or something.
Yeah.
I probably should check that out a little bit more. But, yeah, I like to chew, and I like all these textured things. But
right. I've done
the mono meals from, you know, whether it's fruits, just apples, or, well, pineapple is my big downfall. I adore fresh pineapple. But recently I had a great big butternut squash that I cut in rounds and put it in the oven. And my idea was I was going to cook it and then make a butternut squash soup. But it never got to that point because when I took it out of the oven, I ate 3 slices. I put the rest in the fridge, and over the next day, that was my snacking. I have to get another squash and give it a shot. But, you know, and I didn't put anything on it. No salt, no pepper, nothing. And it was just really, really good. I think that sometimes, well, we stimulate, you know, we want something that's sweet and sour and spicy. And I love spice. I love hot food. But once in a while, you know, it's really nice just to taste it the way it came from the garden almost. And I love it. Like you guys said, this is the easy way. So.
Right, right. Exactly. Well, and then on the same topic as mono eating, I had a really good friend who was diagnosed with Crohn's back in 2009, I believe. And, you know, it barred him from getting into the Army, which was his, you know, big goal. He's in a military school. And then when I tried mono eating, I thought to myself that maybe I should pass it on to him. I never thought he'd actually try it, but I thought I'd pass the idea on to him.
Sure.
And he actually really went with it. And he wasn't 100%, but he was doing at least 2 meals a day of mono eating for extended periods of time. And he cut meat from his diet. And within only a couple weeks, he no longer had the signs and symptoms of Crohn's, and he lost I think he's up to 35 to 40 pounds that he lost.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And he feels like an entirely new person. He's off of his medication. And
I bet his doctor's wondering, like, what happened?
Yeah. So he's.
But he's off his medication and every. Wow. See. Yeah. I mean, it really, really does work. There's something to it. It's not, you know, us just being strange. And we could be strange anyway, but still. Do any of you belong to any kind of vegan group or meetups or anything like that?
Do we? No. We are the vegan group. But what I'd say I'm not a part of the meetup or a group, but what's been helpful for me is my Facebook friends. Because everyone posts and passes along information, and I know I need the reminder, and I need support group because it's so easy. I even notice I go into school in Harvard Square, and just looking at the food options everywhere, like, it's so easy to slip into a standard American diet. Everyone's doing it. And to have my Facebook friends posting their things and reminding me, and I post my things to remind myself too. I really need and like having the reminders of why I'm eating this way.
Yeah, I think that you're right. Facebook has taken the place maybe of us meeting people face to face, but we know the people that we deal with every day on Facebook probably better than I know them, better than I know my neighbors. But yeah, I like to get on because they have new information, and of course there's always new things to sign, petitions and things like that. So, you know, I look to the group for that. And just more nutritional knowledge and stuff. And, you know, some people, they take pictures of their beautiful food. It gives me ideas. I love all that. But I've been vegetarian for 20-some years and vegan for a year. And, I mean, I was so close to vegan, I made myself ill because I would make excuses. And it was just like, finally, you know, I couldn't stand myself anymore. I had to just do it. And I've only felt better. I mean, I don't feel that I missed anything. I wanted to ask all of you, start with Lee. What have you felt any kind of loss since you've been on this type of diet or this lifestyle?
I haven't felt any kind of loss, but I have to tell you, we were all mono eating a lot of fruit. And we got candida itch. Every single one of us when we went vegan, and this isn't something that vegans talk about, and it has to be common if it happened to every single one of us. And we had to, it was when we were mono eating fruit.
Yeah,
if you mono eat fruit, you have to have your fat content intake almost non-existent. It has to be under 10% or you get very itchy skin. It's from a candida rash. For some reason, people seem to be on the down low about that information because they think maybe they're afraid it will turn people off. I don't know why, but we made an elixir of apple, organic apple cider vinegar, one part vinegar, four parts water, sprayed it on our bodies. It took the itch right away, and things are clearing up nicely. So I just want to be really upfront about that. Mm. I have felt no loss whatsoever. And I have watched myself and one by one, every family member become more clear, more athletic, more physically attractive, which of course was not the goal. But I look at these young, glowy, pretty people, and every time I see them, I say to myself, pretty, pretty, pretty. Everybody looks so good and so healthy. And I don't know if your viewers have internet access, but I'm on my blog as well, and I'm 50 years old, and am often mistaken for being much younger.
Definitely, but you look much younger. Yeah.
I have to point an arrow right to. They say when you're of a certain age that if you lose weight, you're going to really age quickly. But I found while juicing and taking in all the micronutrients when I went vegan, juicing and doing smoothing and taking in so many micronutrients, it wasn't true.
I did gain a few lines in my face, and I was actually glad that I did, because my face was so toxic and bloated that I looked that I like I was 30 well into my 40s because of the toxicity. So when I started losing weight and started getting a few lines around my eyes, I said to Kelly, well, you know, this is good. This is what a 40-something-year-old woman is supposed to look like. But I didn't get super wrinkled. My skin didn't droop. I looked pretty good in a two-piece bathing suit this summer. And, you know, I don't look 25, but I don't look near 50 either.
Yeah, no.
So I have no loss.
No loss. Kelly, what about you? Any loss?
I don't really feel any loss because I feel too good eating in a plant-based way. And because I've had times where, you know, if I slipped, I guess you could say, and ate something, but, like, I have not touched meat, but if I had cheese or something, and then I feel bad or my skin breaks out, it's like, it's so not worth it. And
right.
I feel so good having changed to a plant-based lifestyle. Homework is easier. I have more energy. I used to have really bad anxiety, and I was told that I could not get better, that I had to get medicated being a vegan because I wouldn't be getting omega-3s.
Oh.
And that wasn't true. I knew that I would get omega-3s, and 6 months after switching my diet, it was gone.
Yeah.
So I think that was the biggest change for me, and because of that, I do not feel like I'm missing anything.
Yeah. Jeep, what about you? Have you had any kind of a loss that makes you wonder, is this the right way?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't think so. One thing that I like to tell people, you know, because, you know, prior to me being a vegan, I was still a, you know, in-shape guy. I was in the, I was in the Coast Guard. You know, I worked out all the time. But ever since I did go vegan, my family history always had a history of high blood pressure, and I had it, you know, myself, even as a runner and a triathlete. And I think within a month of going, it was less than a month, actually, of going vegan, I was still a vegetarian, I think. My blood pressure dropped about, you know, 20 points on each side. You know, I went from about a 140 to, you know, which is a little high on the high side to a guy my age and, you know, a runner. To a healthy 118 or 120 really quick, and it stuck. You know, I have family members who have been on medications their whole life who can't get those numbers.
Yeah, no, exactly, because the medication won't do it because they keep eating the same thing.
Right, exactly.
So it's most doctors, and, you know, whoever's fault it is or not, the fact remains that most medical doctors do not have any training in nutrition. And so, you know, they're taught to pass out pills. And they may tell somebody, oh, you should lose some weight. And, you know, here, take this for your high blood pressure. Instead of saying, okay, let's really work on the diet. I don't know. When Lee did mention about the candida and the oils and proteins, and the diet, the 20-10-10 stresses no more than 10% oil or 10% protein, and in fact, they say it should, you know, ideally be lower. And so I guess that's why a lot of people that do mono, I know people that don't do any oils except the seeds and nuts, a few, and maybe an avocado every other week or something. I'm not at that point. I happen to like a little bit of olive oil here and there. That's me. So tell me the gains, Kelly. What have you gained? This type of diet and this lifestyle. Besides, you mentioned the clear-headed, your focusing and all.
The biggest thing that I've gained is my anxiety going away. That was a really, really big gain because I felt that, you know, all the time. And I didn't know what it was. And to find out that it was something so simple as what I was eating was, like, so amazing.
Yeah.
And also, I feel strong. I started doing better in school more easily. And I mean, I'm sure if I had all day, I could think of many, many reasons. Just like my overall health, I run very effortlessly. I lost weight. I didn't really need, I was always slender, but I look, since switching my lifestyles, I had kind of a, I don't know if toxic is the right word to look at it, but I had like a little slight bloat that went away. Mm-hmm. And I just overall feel good.
Are you sleeping more? Is your sleep better?
I think my sleeping has pretty much always been pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just asked because I have heard that for a lot of people, they can tell their sleep patterns or their sleep habits. They actually sleep maybe even longer, but it's a good sleep. But that probably has to do with their exercising too. I don't know, Lee, you talked about your health. What else have you gained? Or is that the main?
Yeah, what I gained is, you know, there's, I know people are in denial because I was in denial myself, because living with the self-hatred of carrying extra weight on the body is brutal. It's brutal. Mm-hmm. No one outside can match what a person does to themselves on the inside. Every day getting up and not recognizing myself in the mirror, squeezing into my clothes and telling myself that it was all right, waking up in the middle of the night, gasping for air and being scared to death, because when you have apnea and you're not on a machine, you think you're dying. You're not breathing. And so I would wake up sitting on the side of my bed, not if I was dying, and then eventually my oxygen would come back and I would be okay. And a few times it scared me so badly, I would go into my daughter's room just to make contact with another human being.
Yeah.
And I forget about those things because it's been so long now, but it was a really brutal way to live. And now what I've gained the satisfaction of watching myself and watching the young people around me thrive. That's what I've gained.
And which is, it's so much. It's such a satisfying feeling. It has to be. And no, you had to be terrified when you wake up and can't breathe. That's just.
Yeah, and it was happening all the time. And when it's happening all the time, you start to be in denial. And I remember thinking, well, if I sleep on my right hand side and I tip my chin back, then maybe tonight it won't happen, but sometimes it would happen 3 or 4 times in a night. I mean, I really should have been on a machine for a very long time, and I wasn't. I didn't want to hear it. I didn't want anybody weighing me. I felt trapped. And I'm still, 2 years will be, it'll be 2 years that I went full on vegan. My stomach is, you know, I'm not a rake. I still have a little ways to go. I'd say about a good solid 10 pounds to go till I'm back to my ideal weight. But I'm not on a diet. I'm not in any hurry. I'm not deprived of any food. And if I choose the right thing, I never gain a pound. And I exercise a lot, probably for an hour and a half, maybe 4 or 5 times a week. But I don't do it because I want to lose weight. I do it because I enjoy spending time in the sun, and I put on my MP3 player and it's play.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that a lot of people, when you get to that point, if you don't do it, then you feel a loss because it's just become part of you.
I don't want to interrupt you, but I just wanted to tell you, my daughter Robin just walked in the door from college. And she's the one of us, she did an extended juice fast, and she's been vegan for almost 2 years, and she had an 80-pound weight loss. She just walked in. I'm going to pass the phone over to her.
Wow, yeah, put her on.
Hello,
Robin.
Robin?
Hi. Yeah, well, your mama said that you would probably get here before we went off, so we've just been talking about losses and gains on this lifestyle and how you got there. What would you say to somebody who is contemplating going vegan?
I would say you will feel like a whole new person. Go for it.
And any regrets?
Most definitely not. Before I went vegan, I was extremely overweight and constantly felt tired, had no energy. Just my emotional state was depressed. I was no longer really interested in doing the things I loved, which was playing sports and being active, because I just physically couldn't do it. And that really, really brought me down. And since going vegan, I feel good physically and emotionally, and it's the best thing I ever did.
Did you do it all at once, or did you start out vegetarian and then go vegan?
I pretty much did it all. I did a juice fast, so I had basically carrot apple juice every single day for nearly 60 days.
Wow.
And that was definitely kick-started me, and I developed a new relationship with food.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt so great. I felt so great that once I ended the juice fast, I knew I didn't want to go back to meat or dairy products.
Yeah. Wow, that was a long time. Just apples and celery, you said? No, apples and carrots. Yeah.
Yeah, apples and carrots.
Yeah, but I mean, and you had to lose a lot of that weight in that during that fast.
I lost only half of the weight during the fast.
Mm.
Then I felt, you know, what kept me going during the fast was just feeling so great. And it wasn't just the physical component. It was the energy that I had, and my mind felt clearer than it probably ever has in my whole life.
Okay, that's what the long fasts are really supposed to do. And, I mean, after that, of course, that would give you a whole new, well, I think your taste buds, everything changed when you do that, especially that long of a juice fast. So when you said a new relationship with food, it had to be.
Yeah.
So what is your favorite thing to cook? We asked everybody else.
I personally don't cook much myself. I rely on my mother's expertise.
Okay.
I tend to help myself to whatever happens to be on the stove, if we're speaking honestly. My form of cooking is mainly relying on green smoothies, because to me it's just quick and easy, and I know I'm getting all my nutrients there.
What do you put in your smoothies, your favorites?
Frozen strawberries, bananas, a big, huge handful of fresh spinach, and then I also like to put in some sort of protein powder, but not just any protein powder. I get organic, vegan, usually from the Whole Foods store.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds good. Anything that's got strawberries and bananas has my vote. And you say that they are frozen, right? You freeze your bananas too?
Sometimes. Usually it's fresh, just the fresh bananas and then the frozen strawberries and then the fresh spinach. And the great thing about the strawberries and bananas is you can't taste the spinach at all.
Yeah. Well, and, I mean, I happen to love spinach too, so if there's a little green, that would work. Kelly said that she read the book, The Kind Diet, and your mom said Earthlings was a major thing. Was there a turning point for you? Or not a turning point, but maybe something that you read or saw that just clicked in your brain and you said, okay, for sure, I'm not eating animals again?
Well, the first step was seeing the documentary Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead.
Yeah.
And at that point, I wasn't so much thinking about the animals yet, but it definitely got me thinking of what am I putting into my body. And after watching that documentary, I went to Target the next morning and got myself a juicer, and then I went to the grocery store and loaded up on fruits and vegetables because I was like, I don't eat fruits and vegetables. And at that point, before watching the documentary, I thought I was going to be fat, sick, and nearly dead for the rest of my life.
Okay, that
was my turning point.
That was it. See, I like to hear what does it for people. Because there's so many, there's good books, there's good movies, and good speeches, like Gary, and I can't pronounce his last name, but it starts with a Y. Like, you'll see it advertised sometimes, the best speech you will ever hear. And,
right.
You know, he's at a college, and he has about an hour-long speech. But there's a lot of things that, bring us around, or just make that bulb just go on.
Yeah, go
like,
off.
Oh,
and then
God.
After that, I also watched Forks Over Knives, and that gave me a lot of insight into the quality of the animal products that we're eating.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like a step-by-step. First, I was like, let's get the fruits and veggies in, and then I was realizing after watching Forks Over Knives, holy cow, these animal products are really, really awful for our bodies.
Right.
And then just from the things my mom and sisters had told me, I couldn't fathom watching the movies that they have out there about the cruelty to the animals. I don't think I'd ever be the same again. But just through my mom relaying the information to me, I was like, okay, enough said. I don't want to be eating animal products anymore, ever again.
I'm
not typically an emotional person, but I do remember when I watched Earthlings and I didn't watch most of it, I didn't realize how deeply it had affected me, and I was not for 1 minute did I even try to turn Robert or Kelly vegan. I never said that they should be vegan. Try this. It was all by demonstration, and I wasn't trying to demonstrate. They were just observing what was going on with me.
Yeah.
And when I watched the movie Earthlings, just by having them around and wanting to convey like something that I had seen, I couldn't speak about it without starting to cry. It was so upsetting. And I would look at the looks on their faces, and they were totally shocked because I'm not typically a crier. So they were looking at me like, this must be some heavy-duty stuff for her to be acting like this over it. And that was pretty compelling and convincing. I'm giving the phone back to Robin now.
And another thing in regards to animal cruelty that occurred to me is I have a little dog, a mini schnauzer. He's adorable.
Mm-hmm.
And it occurred to me, what's the difference between eating bacon at IHOP for breakfast and taking the dog out to the backyard and having him for breakfast? There really is no difference.
Exactly. It's pretty much the same. And in some countries, I mean, they do eat dogs and cats. And that one country in South or Central America where they raise those beautiful hamsters, they run around their house and they eat them. Or not hamsters, guinea pigs. So it's just wherever you are. And, you know, you get the stories of these animals and the love that they have for their babies and things, and when they're, you know, torn from them to go to the veal, whatever I want to say it's not the farm, they're still on that farm, but anyway, into the veal room where they're tied down, they can't move, and then, you know, into it, they kill. You know, I mean, all of these, and the mothers are crying and missing their babies, and it's not supposed
it's
to be like that. So... yeah, there's a lot out there. And have you ever, besides in your family, didn't one of you say that you had suggested something to a friend? I mean, like to read or to look at?
Well, you know, it's funny. I'm a teacher, so I work in an elementary school. And my coworkers have seen me coming and going with some really interesting looking concoctions in glass jars. Sometimes orange, sometimes green. So they ask me, what are you drinking? That green drink looks awfully frightening. And I tell them what it is. But you know, they listen because they've seen the transformation. I've been working there for 3 years now.
Yeah.
So they've witnessed the before and the after. And again, not just, yes, my physical appearance is drastically different, but I have a lot more pep in my step. And I am genuinely happy most of the time. So they're wondering.
Your coworkers have seen the difference, just like Jeff was talking about his friends. And Kelly, Willie, I mean, everybody, you have all made such or shown such a change that the people who know you and work with you can see it. And I guess that's the best leading by example kind of thing. You just do it. And if anybody asks, you're available to explain.
I never have pushed it on anyone or brought it up around the teachers conference room or anything like that. they've always come to me, and then I've had them come back, you know, days later. What was the name of that sausage watch? Can you write it down for me? Or what is it that you put in your green smoothies? And then I have them come back and say, oh, I tried that over the weekend. It's actually pretty good. And,
yeah, right. I didn't fall out from it, huh? okay. Our time has gone.
Oh, I think Mr. Kelly just wants to say something really quickly.
So we're talking about not pushing it on anyone. And I think one of the reasons why I don't push it on anyone is because I was in denial myself not that long ago. And the whole system of food in this country is set up to be in denial. And unless you're ready to hear it, it's going to make you mad. You're not going to hear it. You won't hear it unless you want to hear it.
Yeah, I agree.
And I also don't really feel a necessity to judge people who eat meat because they really don't know any better.
Right, but then that's when it is like, okay, so what can I do without turning them off to make them start thinking about it kind of thing? There's a line in there.
Me, what I feel about it is me being healthy and happy and vibrant and eating the food that I eat. And if anyone to ask me about it, I talk about it, you know, relatively frequently. It comes up in conversation a lot in my life. But, you know, just being a demonstration of it is the biggest thing you can do. Because people want to know what you got going on.
Yeah.
They can't, you know,
they don't know about, you know, the word vegan. I read recently, somebody said that, you know, I used to think it was another planet or something. They don't even know in this day and age, much less they don't really know about GMOs. They don't know about so many of these things. But you know what? We're going to have to do this again because we have run out of time. The Boston Vegan family, Lee, Kelly, Jeep, and Robin, can be found at Boston Vegan Family. .blogspot.com. And thank you all so much for coming in.
Thank you. We're all sitting here saying thank you. I don't know if you can hear us.
Okay, everybody says thank you. Thank you. But, no, really, I really appreciate this. And we'll put it out to people who didn't hear it now. They're going to hear it in the archive. So it's all good.
Great. Awesome.
Okay, good night, everybody.
Good night, Ruth.
In the beginning of September, you'll find DaughtersDevices.com fully functional and waiting for you to go on over and make your purchases of any of our oils or our flower essence formulas or misters or powders, potions, and brews, because we've even got teas. That's the ancestor of aromacology over at DaughtersDevices.com. Thank you now for coming by to see us. We appreciate it.
Following program, 30 Minutes with Michael Staples, is pre-recorded.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome again to another episode of 30 Minutes. I'm your host, Michael Staples, and this evening, my guest is Nicole Schoen. Nicole is the Communications SD Coordinator at Lesson Planet. She's also a freelance content strategist and a former teacher. Nicole, welcome to the show.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So this evening, I want to talk about a new initiative that is, well, it's probably not so much new anymore, but new to a lot of people. This is happening in education circles, known as the Common Core. Nicole, what exactly is the Common Core?
Well, if you were to look at the website, the Common Core is basically a nationwide or an initiative that was started to create a nationwide set of standards that one to all be participating, and that would serve as a foundation so that all students would be prepared to either go to college or to participate in a career when they graduated high school. Essentially, the Common Core are structured in a way that assumes that the purpose of education is, of our public education, is to prepare students for college and for careers. And so the standards themselves essentially start at with the basic question of what does a student need in order to be successful in a college setting or in their career, and standards are mapped backwards from this basic, probably not so basic, question, and skills from kindergarten through high school work towards building all of the 21st century and learning skills and understanding that students will need to be successful.
Okay, terrific. And who came out with the Common Core standards? Who are the creators of this movement?
There's a lot of ways to answer that question. If you look at the website, originally this was an initiative that was kind of a coalition of business and varying levels of educators, so schools from, I think, 28 different states or more than 20. And it was also various organizations that are interested in furthering students' success in schools. So all these different organizations and schools and businesses came together and kind of gave their input. Now, currently, after the standards were originally published, and throughout the whole time they were being published, there wasn't really anyone who was touted as being the author. But once they were published, two people came forward as being the quote-unquote authors of Common Core, one being Sue Simmons-Hall, and then the other, misplaced the glass in my head.
no problem.
So anyway, both of the people who come forward as authors of Common Core, I'll think of David Blasting for a second, they kind of have worked in the business side of standards. Neither of them actually, David Coleman, thank you. Neither are actually educators themselves. They just worked in the education business, running businesses that focus on standards currently. And so it's an interesting concept that these are the actual authors. Because while they're recognized in the business world as being experts, on standards, it's an interesting fact that they are not actually educators.
That is very interesting and one that kind of surprises me.
It surprised me too, to be honest. There's two ways of kind of looking at it. And one way is kind of with the negative lens of, oh, well, why are these people telling us what to do when they aren't educators? And which is one stance you can take. Another stance you can take is to recognize that it wasn't, in fact, fully authored by these two people, that it was a whole kind of portion of people who authored these. And these are really kind of more spokespeople for the Common Core, who are benefiting financially from it, to be frank. But in a sense, if you kind of think about it, if you're going to communication does have a business component, and that is selling an idea. And so that's what they've done.
Absolutely. Why do we even need a Common Core in American education, in your own opinion?
You know, that's a wonderful question. In my opinion, the cause of this, so why we need a Common Core, if you look at all of our the statistics from recent years, America's just has been falling farther and farther behind other countries in terms of its high school graduate skill level, even its college graduate skill level. And part of that could be attributed to the focus of kind of skills-based education, which has really been the focus of NCLB, learn this fact, answer this question, a fill-in-the-blank question where the answer is in the textbook, fact-finding.
Right.
And in our information age, fact-finding isn't really valuable. Anyone can do that. The value and the skill comes in when a person is able to evaluate and synthesize all this information, all these facts, and do something with it, and oftentimes work with other people to do something with it. And that hasn't been, at least in the last 10 years of NCLB, it hasn't been truly the focus of education. The focus has been on facts. And so now there is this need for Americans to recognize that there's more to it than just finding the facts. And I think that's what the Common Core is really aiming to do, is to foster these higher level thinking skills and communicating skills. A lot of Common Core standards incorporate some element of working or collaborating with others, or listening to others' opinions and then giving evidentiary based reasoning that supports or refutes this or supports this in different viewpoints. And all of these kind of higher level thinking skills that haven't been addressed in standards recently in our country. So I would say that the biggest reason the Common Core is kind of critical, really, for our country, is that we need a shift. And is this the only way that it could be shifted? No. And is it the best way? I couldn't answer that. But it is a way. It's kind of like, when change is needed, sometimes you just need to change and then evolve from there.
Yeah.
And I see this one way of us doing that.
Absolutely. Now, in the past, each of the states, I believe, had their own sort of standards or educational benchmarks that they had created to meet their students' needs. How will the introduction of the Common Core, will it eliminate state standards? Will they be incorporated? How will that transition take place as far as your own understanding?
Excellent question, and one that really is going to be left up to, depending on the school or district or state, it's going to be left up to kind of those stakeholders to determine that. As you may know, currently the only standards that have been introduced are for math and language arts. And while the language arts standards do incorporate one wonderful element, in my opinion, which is that they require that all subject areas, regardless of whether they're language arts based or not, do incorporate language arts and do teach some elements of language arts that apply to their discipline. But, for example, science and social studies don't yet have standards that have been released. There's kind of a draft put out, but it hasn't been official yet. And so there's going to be some kind of negotiating going on there where, for a time, a lot of schools and districts across the nation will be doing both, in a sense. They'll be teaching going on where a lot of school funding is still tied to NCLB, which is still tied to the tests that were built around their state standards. And so there's going to be some times here where it's kind of a limbo where you're kind of straddling both worlds. And in areas where there's not Common Core like science and social studies yet, those I'm assuming will stay with what currently is there since there's nothing else that's been in place there yet. And in terms of it's actually another interesting fact of the Common Core, which is that every state that has adopted them is allowed to change up to 15% of the standards to kind of alter it to fit the needs and the desires of their state. So, for example, off of my head, I know one example is that California, as part of its 15%, decided to put the standard of having cursive writing taught back in to our standards, even though that wasn't a national requisite, but our state, someone in our education department decided that was something that was really important to education, and so they kind of reinserted that standard. And to be honest, I don't know if that means that it substitutes for something else or just an additional, but there is a certain amount of differentiation so that kind of states could negotiate a little with the standards and have it meet some of the needs that they are accustomed to or value that are in their current standards.
That's very interesting. That's an aspect that I was not aware of. So will that affect the ability of the Common Core to be common?
You know, I would say that not, essentially, mostly because, well, one, 15% is a pretty small margin, but in essence, it's not like maintaining that 15%, it's not like they're going to be able to take out the essence of the Common Core, which in many parts is this really intense focus on, as I said before, higher order thinking and evidentiary reasoning and collaboration and communication skills. Those are things that are kind of fundamental to Common Core, deeper levels of thinking. And so while I'm sure you could negotiate whether you're going to teach past principles in sixth grade or whether you're going to ignore that idea, you are, in either case, not going to be able to negotiate around the fact that there are certain ways of thinking and being that the students are going to have to engage in for the standards. So my assumption, this is pure assumption, is that some of the nitty-gritty details may be different, but the overall competencies and core competencies will remain pretty equal across the states who have adopted the Common Core.
Okay. Nicole, can you give us an idea of how I get a good impression of what the Common Core is set up to do, but how does it address student needs? How does it work exactly? How is it set up to, take a student from kindergarten through 12th grade and, graduate them with the competencies that we seek for our students to have? How does it do that?
Again, lots of ways to answer that question. One way is to kind of think of Common Core as kind of like a staircase. If you're going to build a staircase, you need to know how high it has to be before you build it, right?
Absolutely.
So you go through and you figure out, okay, I'm going to build this house, and it's going to need stairs. So those stairs are going to be X amount tall. Well, once you've figured out how tall those are, then you need to figure figure out how big each step needs to be, right? How much does each step raise to kind of get you your ultimate goal at the top of the stairs?
Mm-hmm.
And so kind of thinking it in that term, or in those terms, the Common Core figured out what the top was, you know, what do we want students to be able to do at the end of 12th grade, and actually more than the end of 12th grade, what do we want our citizens to be able to do when they graduate from a school as both learners in universities, and what do we want them to be able to do in their careers? And those are obviously very different skills involved there, but there are also some commonalities. So we have to those commonalities and focus on those. And then not backwards, really. So you say, okay, this is how high it's going to be. Now, if I lower it, you know, just 6 inches, that's how high my one stair is going to be. Then I need to figure out what those 6 inches are. You know, we're thinking metaphors here, of course. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe if by college you need to be able to clearly articulate an opinion based off of another person's response, and you need to have been prepared with counter arguments, ideas, and you should have been to pull in outside references and opposing viewpoints to support your point or to negate the other person's point. So maybe, I'm not actually pulling from a parent right now, I'm just kind of giving an example.
Sure.
So that is, if that is 6 inches below your college level. And so then the next level down would take those same skills, but then maybe, you know, go, okay, well, what's a little bit lower than that? So maybe instead of being able to pull an opposing viewpoint and kind of listen to someone else and respond immediately, maybe they have more of their, or maybe they have 10 opposing viewpoints, they have 2 opposing viewpoints, and they are possibly conversing in more of a structured environment as opposed to a less structured environment that would be kind of a higher level thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like it kind of took every standard and moves backwards. And this is actually, I'm thinking more of language arts here,
mm-hmm.
where it kind of steps down, and then that came all the way down through kindergarten. They structured the language arts with this set of anchor standards. And that's kind of what I referred to as really being the college level standards. And then they just kind of combed those skills backwards until you get to the kindergarten. Math was done a little bit differently. And that's anyway, different groups working on these different standards. And so instead of having kind of an overarching college level, they just really started at 12th grade and moved backwards from there. Building, and again, the same idea of building from the top down. So you go, okay, here's what they need to know at the end. How do they get there? And then just kind of incrementally working towards that grade by grade.
Okay. Terrific. So currently there is both math and English language arts standards that are published. But they are working towards releasing standards for other subjects as well. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
There was a science draft put out, and it actually was available online for a few days, and they pulled it off again. They said, hey, give us your feedback. Okay, that was all the feedback we want, so we're going to take it and go back and look at it again. For social studies, there hasn't been. Actually, I'm going to say that I have not seen the social studies one. I honestly don't know off my head if the draft was released yet for that. But the idea would be that they will be releasing those at some point as well. I
challenging to create a sort of, you know, a commonality only because, well, different parts of our own country have experienced history somewhat differently. So, you know, depending on where you come from.
Adopted Common Core, that's a really huge issue, one which
deeply disturbing to some people because they say, well, looking at our current budget, I don't see how we're going to rectify the issue so that we can have our students tested in a timely manner, particularly for, you know, many schools that don't have reliable internet access or, you know, don't have wireless or they don't have enough computers to facilitate having all their students on a computer at the same time. So it really calls into question some fundamental requirements that are needed in order to participate and to adopt the Common Core. So there's a lot more to a picture than the state just saying, oh, we don't like those.
Definitely.
And there are states even who are part of the initiative, who signed up to be a part of the initiative, but did not adopt them. So there's even the possibility that those states that didn't necessarily adopt them may still be using them, just not being committed to the full scope of the testing that goes along with them.
All right, great. Well, Nicole, thank you so much for coming on the show this evening and telling us a little bit about the Common Core and, you know, the changes that are coming to education in the coming years. And, yeah, we really appreciate it and just want to thank you for your time.
Well, thanks so much for having me on. It's a pleasure being here.
Excellent. And I just want to thank my listeners for listening to another episode of 30 Minutes. Please join us next week when we'll have another person with another story to share. And I also like to thank our sponsors, Air Emotivio Radio. Thank you and good night.